Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican's podcast. I'm Chris Gunness. This is The Art of Change, a series featuring artists who are passionate about changing the world. Today, the second in a four-part series featuring Stephen Fry, writer, actor, comedian, and campaigner, who I've been talking to about many issues, including his own bipolarity. Last time, we explored Beethoven's suicidal Heiligenstadt testament, the note written to his brothers as his deafness drove him to the depths of depression, but also to the heights of creativity. I put it to Stephen that it was this aspect of Beethoven, the highs and the lows, that really spoke to him.
Before I could even begin to understand it, and I'm not claiming that I really do now, because who can understand music, but when I was 13, 14, a miserable adolescent, not quite knowing what my sexuality was or what love, sex and everything else was, and not conforming to rules, one of the pieces of music that most obsessed me, there was a little gramophone room in the school, and you could go and you could book it. And there was a, because, you know, people didn't have their own music systems in those days, or if they
hard
did.
Hard to imagine it, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, most of them, my fellow schools, it was all Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, and charming too, but I would go down and I'd discovered the Egmont Overture. And right. Which is like all of Beethoven concentrated into a capsule form. If you want to know what Beethoven is like, in a way, it's the perfect piece of music because it has so many of the qualities that I've been talking about. And I would go and I would air conduct with tears streaming down my face. Oh. I mean, absolutely in a state of complete bewildered ecstasy in the way that only an adolescent can be. And maybe that connection that I forged with Beethoven is still alive, so that's something that his music still does, the inexplicable power to make me go, yes. You know, that it reminds me of a great line of Philip Larkin's. You know, he wrote a poem on Sidney Bechet. His passion was jazz, of course. And I could say this of Beethoven: on me your sound falls, as they say love should, like an enormous yes.
Oh, isn't that magical?
I think that's magical. It. Now, obviously, I don't know what it's like to lose hearing. We all of those who are blessed with hearing and sight and all the senses are bound to imagine sometimes what it'd be like. And we know from the extraordinary achievements of people who have no hearing or have been born deaf or have acquired it, and similarly with sight too, what they're capable of. And Beethoven is an example of that too. He's an example of something that's taken us a long time fully to understand, that the only real disability is a lack of curiosity, a lack of will, a lack of love. Those are disabilities. But a lack of hearing is something that doesn't stop anybody from being 100% human. It's only a lack of love that stops you being 100% human.
Stephen, I have to ask you, one of the things I assume that attracts you to Beethoven is this man of great highs and great lows. You've been very passionately and very movingly honest about your own manic depression, your bipolarity. Yeah. Is that one of your attractions to Beethoven?
Yes, it is, I think. I think because, for two reasons. One, because you feel a fellow spirit in some way, someone who is also, you know, brave enough to, he is in his case, brave enough to reveal the something about the human spirit. I mean, Mozart was charming, and sometimes little moments, flares of it. But with Beethoven, there's a true sense of the frailty and vulnerability of what it is to be human. So there's that. But also, there's I won't say a curative, because that's certainly not the word, but there's a healing quality to that, to listening to it, that actually helps, especially with those quartets. I find that they do, you know, when combined with not, you know, not drinking too much and walking and eating properly and all the other things that sort of supposedly help one's mental health as well as clearly one's physical health. But yes, you look to that sort of thing, that the purity and the passion of art does help with the mind, I think. And when I get a lot of letters from people saying, you know, how do you stay sane? And so, well, I don't, for a start. partly acceptance of what is, a doctor would call, a chronic condition. It's there, like, I don't know, diabetes or asthma or something. That's, you just kind of, it's how you manage it and cope with it. And one of the ways I cope with it is to bathe myself in music like Beethoven's, and to think of people who've gone before me, who've been lit by the flame of mania and doused by the icy water of depression, and lived those lives of flaring up and going down and being close to the edge, and how they have managed to do things and to achieve things and to retain their love and hope, and one clings to that. And I'm, of course, luckier than so many others. I have so much support around me, and I've also been able to give myself time to help myself physically, which I think is a huge help.
Yeah. Can I ask you, though, I mean, it's a very personal stuff, but you have attempted suicide 3 times. You've been very public, very movingly passionate about the issues around that. In those low moments, do composers like Beethoven, do what he stands for, mean even more? Or is that too cheesy a thing to ask you?
I think they do when you recover from the real depths that make you want to take your life. Because once you come to that feeling that's inside you, this overwhelming feeling of it's such a cheap phrase, it sounds, what's the point? But that's sort of really what it's about. Inside you just do not see the point of anything. Nothing has flavor or savor. Nothing has any meaning. Everything is just hopeless. There's no future. There's no sense of anything ahead of you. And you have to hope that something will stop you. And in my case, it was just failed attempts, and waking up in a hospital or whatever. And in your recovery, in the fact that you realize people kind enough to forgive you, because you feel such a fool and you feel you've done it to them, you know, all the guilt and shame that comes from an attempt on one's life that has gone wrong, and it's in the recovery, it's when you suddenly find that flavor, suddenly life is color again. And Beethoven is a perfect example of someone who brings that color back to you quicker than almost anything else.
Wow.
And that's a sign that you're you know.
Yeah. I've actually seen you said you couldn't imagine life without Beethoven.
No.
Is this what you're talking about?
It is that. And I'm fully aware that to those, you know, for whom all this is, I don't know, elitist or something, it sounds pretentious. And it's, you know, obviously I can't make someone feel what I feel when I listen to Beethoven. But I do know many others who feel the same, and many others who are not in any way musicians or in any way from privileged backgrounds where they've you had it taught to them. You can't really somehow you respond, and you just hope. I mean, it's the greatest hope of those of us who love Beethoven is that this celebration of him, his life, his personality, his struggle, his art, all the things we know about him will just, you know, open the door to more young people who will suddenly hear him and be thrilled by what they hear and realize that he is a modernist. He walks with us in the present in the way that music always can, and that he's not a bit of... He's probably the first of the great composers not to have a wig, which is huge, which I know is a huge off-putting thing for a lot of people. You know, they describe classical music as the people in wigs, and I can see what they mean, Handel and Bach and Mozart. Yeah. And, you know, the wigs get smaller, but eventually they have their own hair.
Yeah.
Frizzy hair of Schubert and the marvellous hair of Beethoven.
Now, when you describe him as a great humanitarian, what exactly are you getting at?
Well, I suppose you can look at the obvious landmarks in his music, like the Eroica, which he famously scratched out his dedication to Napoleon because he couldn't bear tyranny. So he was, in that sense, he was a... certainly can't use phrases like left wing, but he was a man of the people. You know, he had supported the revolution. He didn't like the aristocracy. He believed in that all men, and by that he meant mankind, of course, it wasn't gender weighted, should be brothers, i.e. brothers and sisters. All humanity are brothers and sisters, which to us is an easy thing to say and sounds like a cheap greeting card. But in the early 19th century, this was revolution. And it led in the 1840s, 20 years after his death, to the great period of revolutions that looked as if it, you know, it dislodged a lot of ruling houses and so on. And it was the beginning of the journey of our species, certainly in Europe, obviously, from the enslavement of ecclesiasticism and absolute monarchy to some element of democracy. Of course, it didn't stop the beginning of the Age of Empire and the shackling of many others, and slavery was still going on in his time. So, of course, we can scold the era very properly for all the things that it got wrong in our estimation. But there were energies in it that still to this day are about the human spirit, about the greatness of the individual, the possibility of the individual. And in a sense, it's the dance of one rather than the courtly minuet and the dance of many. You know, it's the fact that the music is suddenly, like, you know, when I was a teenager and I did listen to what was laughingly called prog rock, you know, so, and you'd have the album on your legs, and maybe someone was skinning up a joint and you would listen to those long guitar breaks or huge drum solos, and it wasn't dance music in any way. Yeah. It was something else. Some of it was absurdly pretentious, of course, and silly, but it was about the same idea. We were a generation that were not going to be told, and for all that I'm a kind of embedded in an establishment, and my voice sounds as if vocal cords sound as if they're made of tweed, I am someone who has the greatest admiration for people who won't be told what to think, won't be told how to eat, how to paint, how to draw, who reinvent and who stand up and who are, and I kind of sometimes wish young people were more vanity is saying this, but it seems like earlier younger generations were, right up through the 70s with punk and everything, were much more able to express that. And Beethoven, had a punk sensibility, if you like. I mean, not obviously in the music, but in that, he just, damn you, was his view. He shook a fist at fate. I mean, the most famous tune in all classical music isn't even a tune, it's a rhythm.
Ba, 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 ba. Yeah.
And it's, it was first in his lifetime described as fate knocking on the door. Mm. And it is, and of course it happened to have this remarkable coincidence that it's also the Morse code sign for the letter V. Yep. So it was used for victory amongst the Allies in the Second World War, the da-da-da-da. Mm. And then Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the Ode to Joy section, became the hymn of Europe. Mm. And it still is to this day. So he's always been, connected with this idea of shaking your fist at tyranny and absolutism and being free.
That was Stephen Fry ending this edition of The Art of Change on Nothing Concrete with me, Chris Gunness. Next time, the third of our four-part series with Stephen Fry, in which he'll talk about his international advocacy for gay rights and men being more open about prostate cancer. You can subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help get the word out. Until next time, from me, Chris Gunness, goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.